am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 17, 2023. My home group is YPG. And I asked Bree to speak for me tonight because she's known me since the beginning, straight out of detox. And she's shown me, like, what unconditional love is. She's taught me all about like prayer and why it's so important, which is way different than what I ever used to think. Through her experience, strength, and hope, she's walked me through the steps, and shown me how to live a better, healthier life. So here's Bree.
My sobriety date is March 25th of 2021. It's amazing to be up here and speak for Aaron. Little known fact. When they talk about people who are like literally on the brink of death, you know, like you have like a picture in your mind, like that was her. She couldn't walk. You know, like she had lost the ability to walk, and like alcohol literally took everything from her, you know, and being able to like sit there and watch her come up here and celebrate 2 years is like one of the best experiences I've ever had in Alcoholics Anonymous. And just being able to see a bunch of people come in here and like stay sober is amazing to me. And I never thought I'd be like that person, because when I came in here, I hated all of you. I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona with my family. My upbringing was like pretty normal, and then I turned like 5. But my parents loved each other very, very much. So much so that they kept separating and getting back together a lot. they gave it a real valiant effort. And when I was a kid, I remember just seeing them like being like very happy together and stuff like that. But my dad got injured when I was 5, so he's paralyzed from here down. And it took like a very big toll on my family. And like, I don't share that to be like, this is what happened to me. I share that because like, it's just stuff that happened in my life that carried through, you know, my adulthood. By no means does that make me alcoholic. Like, I like to get that very clear, is like a lot of the stuff that I share, like, about like me growing up and, you know, my life before I reached AA, like that does not make me alcoholic. You know, it's just stuff that's part of my story. And my family kind of drifted apart after that. He was what, like 35 or something like that. And like the older I get, the more insane it is to me to like think about that happening to anybody that I love. It was rough for a little bit. And then we moved here to Florida when I was like 10. Mind you, I have like, 30, 35 first cousins. I come from a very, very big family. My mom's one of 8. And everyone was like in Phoenix. So like my whole upbringing was like, I don't make friends at school because my cousins are at home. And we can just like, you know, fuck off and do whatever we want. So when we moved to Florida, it was a very big change for me. I was very antisocial. And me and my sister went to the same school. Me and my sister are 3 years apart, so we were very, very close for a long time. And we like wreaked havoc on that school. We went to Catholic school. And I just remember, I kept thinking about something that a friend of mine said of like, when it's talking about like we're speaking, like what we were like, what happened, and what we are like now. So, you know, to touch on like how I was before I even had like a drink of alcohol, I remember being sent to the nun's office a lot. I know it's very surprising, but I remember just like, I slammed a kid's hand in a door just cause. I also like kicked some kid in the balls just cause. I stole $20 from my teacher just cause, you know, like just stupid stuff like that. But on like the opposite end of that coin, like we would have like drives for like food donations and toys and stuff like that for kids at the Catholic school. And like, I was always the first person to like go to my closet and get like literally everything I owned just so I could go to the school and like drop it off. And my parents used to get so fucking mad at me because they had to like buy me a bunch of new stuff. And I had like many like talking to about that. But like, those were like the two opposite ends of like my spectrum, you know, like I didn't know why I was that way. It's just who I was. And I remember being, God, I think I was like 14 or something. I like had my first sip of alcohol. It was, the Tecate beer, which I don't even think anyone drinks that anymore. But it was like the only thing in my parents' fridge that I knew like no one drank. And me and my friend got like two or three of them thinking we were going to get trashed. And I tasted it and I was like, this is fucking disgusting. I don't know why my parents do this all the time. And like, that was it, you know? But the first time I really felt the effects of alcohol was, I think, that same year, at the end of the year, me and some friends, my friend, her mom was like out of town or something, and she was a single mom, so like we had this whole townhouse to ourselves, and we had one of our friends get us like a handle of Fireball, because already I was like overshooting the mark. I was like, I need a whole handle for my first time to get drunk. And of course I was like the one who like drank the most out of anybody, because I was like, I needed to hit me like right now. And we mixed it with red Gatorade. Super horrible mix, don't recommend. But I got so drunk, I just remember wanting to like wander off. That's also like who I was as a kid too. Like if those like leash things existed when I was a kid, my parents would 100% invest in at least five of them, because I was the kid that was always at like the security center being like, where are your parents? I don't know if anyone's seen like the episode of Malcolm in the Middle where he's like chasing a balloon and then ends up like 10 blocks from where he is and doesn't know where he's at. That was me. So I felt the effects of alcohol and I was like, life is so beautiful. Nature is so beautiful. I wanted to go walk down the street. I wanted to go do all these things. And my friends were like chasing after me, like freaking out because I'm probably not walking very straight. I'm next to like a major road. You know, it doesn't look good on the outside, but from my perspective, I was like, life is perfect. If I could feel like this all the time, life would be amazing. And I ended up getting really sick and throwing up, and like red Gatorade coming up does not look like normal throw up. So they're thinking that like I'm bleeding internally and like everything is going wrong in everyone else's eyes. And my only thought was like, this is amazing. You know, so like from the jump, I was like only worried about how I felt. Nobody else. And like that continued, you know, I throughout high school I wasn't a good student, but it looked really good on paper. Like one thing that I wanted to make sure of is that like my life looked really good on paper. You know, like I was an honor student in a bunch of AP classes, and like if you looked at like my GPA and my grades, you'd be like, oh, she's doing great. But they also, like, my school called my dad because they were threatening to, like, suspend his license because I'd missed so many days of school. You know, I wasn't there a lot. But, like, I wanted it to look good on paper. I was very good about, like, making my appearance look good. And I was able to manage that throughout high school, but somewhere along the way, right, like, our alcoholism progresses. And I wasn't able to. And, you know, fast forward, I did like a geographical change and ended up in South Florida because that was going to cure me. Don't go to South Florida to get a cure. I ended up living Groundhog's Day. And then I blinked and I was like, oh my God, 3 years went by. Crazy. And my mom actually ended up coming and like basically kidnapping me from where I lived. And like, I was very upset at the time, but like me looking back on it now, like that actually like saved my life. You know, if I would have stayed there doing that same stuff over and over again, like I probably would not be here right now. And you know, she gave me an option. You can either go to treatment or we can Baker Act you. And like my go-to always is like Baker Act, please and thank you. Because they give you a bunch of good meds. I get to watch live PD for a little bit. I think I watched like the whole Blade Trinity at one point. you know, and just sat there and rotted. But something really interesting happened this time, this specific Baker Act. When I was in there, I kind of had like a very clear look at like what my life had become. And I had like an honest look at myself without the help of another alcoholic. It was just me looking at my life. And I had like a really, really good plan on how I was going to like get everything back together. And like my sponsor will tell you, I have really good ideas. But I had like a really good plan, you know, like I'm going to get my family back. I'm going to get a job. I'm going to go back to school. I'm going to do all these things. And my dad picked me up from my Baker Act and I got back home and like I still had some stuff left in my room and I was like, well, I'll just finish this, you know, like why would I let it go to waste? And then like one more trip to the hospital, like it was like just as quick as that, you know? And I recently just discovered that like that trip to the hospital, I thought I was there for a few hours and they took me to like rehab or whatever, but turns out I was like asleep for 3 days. And I had no clue, but I ended up going to this facility and treatment did not get me sober. I just want to like make that clear. It gave me like a place to dry out and it's the place where I found Alcoholics Anonymous by myself. You know, I'd been forced to come to meetings before. I think my first meeting, I was like 17 years old because my family has a good history in AA, but for the first time, I made some friends with some guys who were like coming back from early relapse, had like a few years sober, and they were running this meeting at the detox because it was during COVID and no meetings were being brought in. We couldn't go anywhere. So they took the initiative to print out all the paperwork and hold meetings at this detox. And like, those are the guys I hung out with. I don't know why, but I gravitate towards like 40-year-old men. They're just cooler to hang out with, I guess. But they asked me to come to this meeting and I was like, fuck no, I've been to AA. Like that shit's whack. And they were like, well, just come for tonight. You know, if you don't like it, you don't have to come back. And I was like, okay. I mean, I don't have shit else to do. So I went down there and I went to the meeting and right after the meeting, they came up to me with their papers and they were like, hey, so we're getting discharged tomorrow. So we're going to need you to like keep this meeting going. And I was like, fuck, man, I can do that. And they're like, what, you can't read, like, a script? And I was like, no, I mean, I can do that. So, like, I ended up holding this meeting for these people in the detox, like, my entire time there. And, like, that was my first introduction to AA. And, like, I kept doing AA after that. But I really didn't do, like, the program of action lined out. You know, like, people were talking about, like, the 12 steps and, like, how important it is to go through the 12 steps. You know, there's a spiritual program of action that's, like, literally laid out for me. I don't have to think about it. I just have to do it. And I didn't do that. You know, I hung out in AA. I smoked a lot of cigarettes. I drank a lot of caffeine. I played some cards, went to eat sometimes, you know, and I was fucking miserable. And like the thought occurred to me that like I was young, you know, and I remember telling my dad this and it's so messed up to think about now because I was just manipulating him. But I was like, I just had a bad year. Like, it was just a really bad year. And, you know, off I went again. But the thing is, like, in my experience, there's not enough fucking alcohol in this world to drown out your voices. Like, you guys are incessantly annoying and incessantly ruin my fucking drunk. Because I kept on thinking about the obsession and the allergy. That was like one thing that kept replaying in my head all the time. And I remember waking up being like, I'm going to make it to an AA meeting today. And then, you know, a few hours later, I'd be drunk and be like, fuck, man. Like, how the hell did this happen again? And I did that for months until, like, for some reason, one day I ended up in an AA meeting. You know, people always ask me, like, what was different? You know, what brought you back? Whatever. The only explanation I have is like God, because nothing different happened in that day than the other days before it. The only thing different that happened is like I walked into an AA meeting and the people that I saw when I was sober before and even when I came to my first meeting at 17 years old were still sober, still shooting the shit, still, you know, just asking about each other's days and having fun. And for like the first time in so long, I had like that, you know, like I could breathe again. You know, I didn't know what was going to happen with, you know, my life or anything like that, because I have a lot of problems that, like, need to be solved yesterday, you know, and I have a lot of plans on, like, solving these problems. But for the first time, you know, I walked in and I was like, you know what? Whatever's going to happen is going to happen. What, I don't really have anything else to do. And, you know, I ended up getting back into step work and, like, giving it an honest try, because I really didn't give an honest try of, like, maintaining and enlarging, like, a spiritual contact with God. That was one thing that, like, I just didn't want to do, because I grew up in Catholic school and I believed that there was a God. I just didn't think he was good. You know, I hear a lot of speakers talk about, like, how they didn't think that, like, he wanted anything to do with them or anything like that. But my experience was, like, God's going to come down and smite me, you know? And so I was like, he's not good. I don't want anything to do with him. And, like, I'm so glad today that I have, like, a completely different perspective on God, because I was able to have my own relationship with God. And the way that, you know, my first sponsor explained it was, it's just like meeting a new friend. You know, it's going to be super awkward at first. I'm not going to know what to do with my hands. There's probably going to be an awkward silence and be like, what the fuck do we talk about now? But over time, as you get to know somebody, the conversations get longer, you get to know them a little bit better, and you get a little more comfortable. And, like, that was my experience with prayer. It was super, super uncomfortable at first. I didn't think anyone was listening. I thought I was just talking to myself, which I'm no stranger to. So I was like, whatever, I'll give it a shot. And for some reason, things just ended up going very well. You know, there, I remember this, like, specific day I was at work and I was, like, crying in my car outside. Normal day for, like, my first 60 days. You couldn't pay me enough money to go through, like, my first year. It was horrible. But I was, like, crying in my car on my lunch break instead of eating. And I just remember, like, thinking, I hadn't thought about a drink in, like, I think it was a week. And that had never happened to me. Not since I picked up my first drink. I always thought about alcohol. Always, always, always. And, like, that was just something that, like, propelled me to keep going, you know? And my life in sobriety has, like, not been easy, mainly because I don't make it easy. I'm not particularly good at, like, taking direction sometimes. But, you know, I have a habit of, like, getting complacent in sobriety because, you know, things get really good. You know, I stay sober and I'm not, like, putting alcohol or substances in my body, and, like, I'm able to, like, show up for work on time. I'm able to, like, show up to family events sober and, like, not ruin anything. I'm able to, like, do certain things without, like, being drunk, you know, but on the inside, if I'm not doing anything, I'm still miserable and I still act out in, like, very stupid ways that hurt a lot of people. You know, and I always remember someone said one time, don't ask me how I'm doing when things are bad, ask me how I'm doing when things are good. You know, and that is, like, my direct experience in AA. It's like, when things are going good, like, I have to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. This past year has probably been, like, the hardest year of my sobriety, like, circumstantial-wise. But my sponsor always tells me, like, do more AA and everything works out. And, like, my brain isn't wired like that. Like, I want to touch shit and manage shit and, like, this moves here, this person does this, and then my life will be okay. If I get this and then this, you know, it'll be okay. You know, I thought, like, if I get a house, I'll be okay. If I get a car, I'll be okay. If I get a different job, I'll be okay. And, like, I've gotten all those things and still been fucking miserable. You know, and I was still managing my own life, you know, and, like, everything got stripped away from me this year, you know, like, the job, almost lost the house because I didn't have a job, almost sold my car so I didn't have a car payment, and, like, all these things, and, like, things just started popping up, you know, like, I was able to, like, move my sister into my house, who, like, I hadn't spoken to for, I think, like, 8 years when I got sober, you know, and when I made my amends to her, like, me and her just sat in, like, my mom's living room crying, talking to each other, and she said, I just want to be the sister that you deserve. You know, like, I think both of us were really bad to each other growing up, and, like, we're family, you know, like, we have to be there for each other, so, like, we're both going to work at it together, it's not going to be easy, and, like, we're just, like, sitting there crying, and it was, like, a beautiful time, you know, and I get to like spend every day with her. I get to like spend the day with my nephew, you know, and do all these things. And I got a job that's not really fucking glorious, but I show up because I made a commitment to show up to this job, you know. And the thing is, like, when I do more AA, I'm not so concerned about myself. And that's when things go better, is when I'm not thinking about myself, my own plans and ideas and the way that things should look or the way that I should be doing, you know, and all these things. You know, but what was told to me is like, you've never been this sober, so you don't know how it should look, you know. And the more active I am in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more grateful I am to just be a part of, you know, be like one person in the room and just be grateful that like everyone gets to like show up and be here together. You know, my life is so full today. Like, I could not wish for a better life. Like, life beyond your wildest dreams. It's insane, you know, and it doesn't look the way that I thought it would when I first came in here. But it's so much more than that, you know. And if I spend too much time in my own head and stay there for a little bit, like, I can find a lot of things wrong. And I can find out, like, what could be better in my life. But the more active I am in this program and the more I actively try to seek a relationship with God, everything's okay. You know, I was telling the sponsee today, like, everything will be okay. And we will have experiences being sober where we think the world is going to fucking end because something isn't going our way. And then we make it through and everything's okay. And the more experiences I have like that, the more experiences I know, like, as long as I stay here, like, everything will be okay. And everyone here is going to be here for me. So that's all. Thank you.